what happens usually in a traditional society is that the elders watch the children, and they spot the children who show signs of having this ability, and they begin to train them fairly early on by giving them exercises and playing games with them to encourage them to develop this ability. You know, the very first, I guess you could say the first goal in the shaman's world is simply to catch a glimpse of these spirits. And that was what was happening to me out in the field camp in Ethiopia 30 years ago.
Tell me about that.
I was getting glimpses. Well, I remember one day, I'm out excavating this site with a couple of African men, and this man, Atako, was one of them. And I had been having this very strange feeling for a number of days, like I was being watched by something. And this wasn't a particularly good feeling, of course, because there are leopards, there are lions, there are buffalo. The buffalo were the ones we really worried about, because they're really mean, you know, they're dangerous animals. I had this feeling like I was being observed, and it was much easier to feel than it is to describe, but it was real creepy. And whenever I get this feeling, I'd sort of look around, but I would never see anything. Well, one day, I remember it was in August, it was really hot that day. We were getting ready to go back to camp for lunch, and it's about 115 degrees. I mean, you could cook eggs on the ground. And I've got this feeling really strongly that I'm being watched by something. So I remember standing up and looking around under the edge of my hat, you know, and I didn't particularly see anything. But then I looked over at this guy, Atako, and I noticed that he was looking at something off to my left.
Mm-hmm.
So I slid my eyes in that direction, and I saw something. It was big, and it was about 6 feet off the ground. And when I looked directly at it, it was as though something stepped through a tear in the fabric of the air, which promptly closed as though something behind it zipped it closed like a zipper, leaving this momentary wrinkle that straightened out, and suddenly it was gone. And of course, all this happens in a flash, largely through my peripheral vision. So I looked at this, and I'm thinking, wow, time to go back to Nairobi and have a hamburger and a milkshake.
Yeah, really quickly,
too. I figured I'd been out there long enough. So I look over at this African guy, Atako, and he's watching me. I knew that he'd seen it, and he knew that I knew that he'd seen it, and he knew that I'd seen it. And so I looked at him in Swahili, and I said to him, Atako, what was that? And he gave me this long, measuring look, and he just said a single word in Swahili, Shaitani. That's the word for spirit.
Yeah.
And then he and the other African men had a long conversation in Swahili that I didn't understand. And, you know, that was pretty much the end of that one. But this was what I mean by having these unexpected glimpses where you see something.
Did he see this quite often?
Well, he had spirit vision, as far as I know. Now, you know, I'm sort of looking back across 30 years when I'm talking to you about him, because I haven't seen him in 30 years. And I'm sort of reconstructing what might have happened,
yeah.
Because this was before I got into any of all this stuff that's recorded in my strange books. But you know, it was out there in 1972 that I began to have these very curious lucid states at night. Occasionally we have these states where we're awake all night and we never really go to sleep, and we have these strange, vivid recollections of people we knew in the past,
mm-hmm.
And it's almost like they come and visit us like wraiths, like ghosts, and you have these conversations, and there would be these wakeful nights. Well, one night I had a terrible case of diarrhea. I don't know if this had anything to do with anything or not, but I was kind of feverish. I'd had lunch down at the police post, and the
obviously not a good lunch, yeah.
Yeah, the food had given me the trots, and I was going off to the bathroom about every 15 minutes, and I'm sort of feverish and tossing and turning, and suddenly I found myself pressed up against something really hard. And in trying to get, you know, comfortable, I opened my eyes, and I discovered that I was pressed against the ridgepole of the tent up on the roof.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, what the hell am I doing up on the
yeah.
roof? And I turn over and I look down, and there's my body
yeah.
on the floor of the tent. Well, I freaked, you know, and in freaking, suddenly I was back in my body.
All right, you just jam yourself right back in.
I jammed myself right back in. But this began to happen more and more frequently to me. And I found one night, bumping along the ridgepole of the tent, that I could actually go through the tent screen without having to zip it open. Now, this was quite a discovery.
How did you get to that point? Were you?
I don't really know.
Okay.
I mean, it just happened. I went through the tent fly without having to zip it open, and I found myself having this rather soaring feeling. It's kind of a wonderful, ecstatic, soaring feeling in my body. And I found myself floating up over the camp, and I could see the entire camp from the air, which I'd never seen it before from the air because it was very flat there. And I could see all the tents. I could see the soldiers sort of parading with their weapons at our fire pit. I could see the jackals drinking up our garbage and beyond the camp. I could see the moonlight, and I could see the Ethiopian highlands in the distance. And I remember there was one guy in the camp I really didn't like that much that year. And, you know, when you're in a field camp with somebody day after day after day, it can really begin to wear on you.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so I began to do Red Baron routines where I would sort of strafe his tent with joyous abandon. And it felt so good, you know, I did it again. Yeah, this sort of thing. Well, these were what a shaman would call soul flight. And in those days, I knew nothing about this. And I thought they were dreams. Well, the next morning, I was brushing my teeth at the water tank with one of the other grad students. And one of the African guys walks up to me, a guy named Kambulu. And Kambulu looks at me, and I couldn't tell if he was really looking at me because he was cross-eyed.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he looks at me and he says, "Hey, Dr. Hank, what were you doing flying over my tent last night?"
Oh, my gosh.
That got my attention, George. That got my attention.
He had an ability to see you in your astral spirit world, huh?
Well, he saw me flying over the camp. He saw my astral self.
And yeah.
Attached myself, my physical body, was flying around the camp at night, and he saw it. Now, this gave me something to think about, and I made this sort of cryptic note to myself in my field notes. But, you know, I didn't tell anybody about this, because this isn't the sort of thing you discuss with your academic colleagues.
But he was watching that whole event. How did he have that grasp to be able to do that, to be able to see you?
Well, you know, a lot of people in indigenous societies have it. You know, if I tell you that 50% of a given tribal group has the ability to do this, you know, that means that they have the ability to expand their conscious awareness and perceive in a way which is not possible in an ordinary waking state.
Is it possible, though, Hank, he saw you when he was in his astral state as well?
It could be, you know.
Yeah.
I never found out. I mean, I was so stunned, I almost dropped my toothbrush.
Yeah, because I've never heard of someone in their human body state to be able to witness someone in an astral state. He might have been in his own astral body.
Well, you know, people have pointed out to me that this was a very powerful place because it was in the stratigraphic sediments. And we had a geological section, which was about a kilometer thick that extended from 3 million years ago up to about 1 million years ago. We had the bones of the earliest ancestors there at that time. And so we were in this field, if you could put it that way, kind of like a field of power in which there were all these fossils. We ended up with like 40,000 fossil specimens on this expedition, the bones of baboons and saber-toothed tigers and elephants and hippos, and in amongst them were the bones of our earliest ancestors.